he's already made it in a way with the, some of the stuff he's putting in, and now it's just a case of when does he make that jump up to Mercedes.
Hello and welcome back to the Silver Arrows podcast, where we unravel the riveting twists and turns of the Mercedes-AMG Formula One team. I'm your host, Ben Tinsley, and we have a cracker of a show for you this week in the form of an exclusive interview with F1 TV's lead commentator on Formula 3, Chris McCarthy. Chris has been in the paddock, both single-seaters and karting, for a number of years now, and together we're just putting the spotlight on 17-year-old Italian sensation Kimi Antonelli, the young driver rumoured to be Mercedes' top pick to succeed Lewis Hamilton. And Chris provides a fantastic, unbiased insight into Antonelli's career to date and, of course, his latent potential. And if you're anything like me, I think you're going to come away from this chat perhaps wanting to invest a bit of time into watching the F2 races this season. So we'll be diving into that very shortly. In the meantime, though, we just need to briefly cover F1 testing in Bahrain from last week. It's very hard to work out what's going on, and really there's a bit of guesswork involved, so that's why we're not dedicating the whole show to reviewing the ins and outs of it. But whilst we do have to be careful, it really does look encouraging for Mercedes. There was a really telling interview with James Allison on Sky after day three, in which Allison's body language was certainly immensely positive, even if his words were somewhat calmer. Now, we'll know a lot more after FP1, but let's keep everything crossed. I think the one thing we can say for certain is that testing this year has gone better than the previous 2 years, and therefore it's been the best testing that Mercedes have had in this regulation set. So we're not doing a show on that. It's deliberate. Maybe even by the time some of you listen to this podcast, we'll know a little bit more about exactly where Mercedes are and whether we're going to have an interesting season or not. And finally, just before we kick off with Chris, I just want to say thanks for the fantastic feedback on last week's episode with Bryson and Matt. There were some really nice comments. I think some people really enjoyed the tech aspect of it. And it just made bringing the podcast back for this second season a real dream. So very, very excited about what this year holds. And remember, if you are enjoying this podcast, there's two things you can do that really support us. We are fully independent. We're not backed by any big company. This is really a labor of love. So you can subscribe on your podcast app of choice, which just means you're notified whenever we release a new episode. And you can also rate the podcast, which puts us in a chart and helps new people find us. That's it from me. Let's get started with Chris after the short break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Chris, welcome to the Silver Arrows podcast. It's really good to have you on.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much for having me, Ben. No, it's a pleasure to be on, obviously, season. As we record this, just around the corner, isn't it? Testing, just finishing, which we've had our eyes on today. And that's made me even more excited, not just for F1, but for F2 and F3. But it's a pleasure to be on to talk things through before the season starts.
Excellent. Well, the focus of our discussion today is obviously going to be Kimi Antonelli. Now, you have been around karting in the feeder series, basically, I think I could say, probably all your life in one form or another. I just wanted to ask you, when did you first hear of Kimi Antonelli?
A few years ago now. Kimi Antonelli has been at the top of what he's raced in for a number of years. He was raced in the karting scene at a very high level from, I'd say, around 2017, 2018. He entered the European karting paddocks, the international karting paddocks, I guess we can call that. That's racing in the FIA championships. You know, there is an official FIA karting European and world championship, and that's where we have the factory teams race. And in that, you have a team. Charles Leclerc has his own chassis and own team in that. Lando Norris's chassis have their own factory team in that. Nico Rosberg once had his own team in that, and that's where Andrea Kimi Antonelli actually once raced for, and that's where he first started grabbing everyone's attention. I commentated in that paddock in 2018, and he was coming through as a cadet driver at that time. And then when I left a year later, he started winning pretty much everything. I'd say in 2019 and 2020 was his real dominant years, but I was still keeping a very close eye on it at that time, doing some reporting work. And he was stealing all the headlines, shall we say, racing under Nico Rosberg. I remember, sorry to go on a bit, but I remember when I first entered the European karting paddock, the first story I ever covered before I commentated was Nico Rosberg's team. He just entered 2018 April, and the first driver he signed was a young driver called Taylor Barnard, who's going to be racing in Formula 2 this year. And then the next year, joining him was a driver called Kimi Antonelli, now a Mercedes, at the time was a Mercedes junior, and he was going to be racing for Nico Rosberg. And yeah, we could see why Nico signed him, because he started winning everything.
Sure.
He had the backing of Mercedes as well.
Sure. And is there significance that Nico's team chose to have him as a driver? Does that mean they obviously backed him from an early age?
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, there's, he's racing in the FIA Karting Championships, where you have two classes. You have the OK and the OK Junior. The OK is for your 14 and above, and then OK Junior, your junior class, is 12 to 14-year-olds. And in each of those categories, you have you can have up to 140 drivers racing in a weekend. And Nico Rosberg, when he first started the team, he chose one senior driver and one junior driver in 2018, and his junior driver was Taylor Barnard. His senior driver was a driver called Lorenzo Travisanuto, who now coaches a lot of F4 drivers. The next year, he kept to a similar number of drivers. So when he was picking his drivers, he was picking from a massive amount of drivers. And he picked Kimi Antonelli as one of his drivers to represent him, you know, as a brand, as the Rosberg Karting Academy, it was called. Nico would be at the track, helping them, supporting them. They raced under a team called Kart Republic, who were the top teams. The Dino Chiesa, who runs Kart Republic, once coached two drivers called Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton. Wow. when he was a team boss years ago. When I don't know if you've ever seen the famous pictures of those two together as karting drivers. Yeah. One of them two on the truck when they crashed into each other, I think, together once at a European Championship race. But yeah, he once coached Nico, and now Nico was Nico had put this new kart academy into Dino Chiesa's team, and Kimi Antonelli was racing with him.
That's so cool. That's so cool. So presumably by this point, he was already on Mercedes's sort of radar. Do you know much about how his sort of karting career went before then? Was he like obviously gold dust from a very, very young age?
Yeah, yeah. I know. I believe he was winning stuff in Italy from around 2015. I believe Mercedes signed him in 2017. Mm-hmm. And it's because he really did fly on the market very quickly. And his name was being talked about. Very quickly, yeah. As this, you know, this kid is very, very talented. There was a lot of excitement around him, I guess, because of where he was from as well. There hadn't been a top Italian driver in Formula One for a little while that had been successful.
Yeah.
And everyone thought, you know, this kid could be the next guy to do it. And it was because he was winning everything. You know, he was winning, you know, European and world championships. There is a big group of championships called that run under WSK Promotion. They're an organization who run the Italian F4 championship now as well. And He was winning, you know, like WSK Euro Series, which they run, WSK Super Master Series, Final Cups, things like that. He was winning all these championships as well. So he was, completely dominating. He was always at the front, and it was that form, really, that Mercedes got hold of very, very quickly to make sure that they had him before other people spotted him.
There's a real irony here that we're obviously talking about Kimi as a potential replacement for Lewis, who's gone off to Italy when Kimi is Italian himself. It almost feels like it would work better the other way around, but I'm certainly not going to moan. Do you think, is it rare to sort of dominate those karting classes, or is it quite common that actually you get a generational talent who comes through and just wins most things that they get involved with?
That's a good question. I'd say because there's so many drivers on these grids, it can be rare to see someone come in and win pretty much everything. But I'd say every now and then you do get drivers that just hit a real good relationship with their team. These drivers, as I said, are a lot of them are factory drivers where they're racing with a factory team. You know, these factory teams have their own chassis, similar to, I guess you could compare it to Formula One. You know, Sauber build their own car and run their own car. They're all on the same, and you also have different engine builders as well. So it's, you know, a driver will find a chassis that they're happy with, the team running that, an engine builder that they're happy with. If that all molds together really well, then a driver can come out of it and do really successfully. In karting, it is so close though as well. You know, there's 0.2 between 60 drivers sometimes is the kind of levels we're talking about when you get to the European Championships. And fine margins, but some drivers can come out of it very well. And I think that was the impressive thing with Kimi. It was the level of consistency he showed to be always at the front every time in the European Championships. We've seen a few drivers show form like that. I think Taylor Barnard, who I mentioned, was another one of those who was always at the front. And there's more currently on their way through who have shown form like that as well, who are very exciting ones to watch out for the future. But he was certainly one of those. And that's what got a lot of people excited.
So before he made the jump into single-seater racing, obviously he's a double European karting champion. Now, for people who perhaps don't understand, what's the main differences between going from karting into single-seater racing? How big a difference is it? And how did Kimi sort of cope with that compared to other people?
Yeah, obviously, first of all, it's a massive achievement to win the FIA Karting European Championships. Yeah. They tend to run four rounds. And they only score points in the final two races. You get your points in your finals and your pre-finals as well. The meetings are very long. They'll start on a Thursday, run through to Sunday, but it can all fall away like that on the first lap of a final. But only four rounds, and one of those rounds they tend to drop as well. So you're working off three races essentially. So they all have to be, if you're not winning at least one race, you're out the championship. That's how the drivers sort of view it. Kimi Antonelli to win two of those and beat over 100 drivers to the title each time. Very, very impressive. And that's huge consistency, which he beat a lot of the guys he's racing that are racing Formula 3 this year, some that are even racing Formula 2. And that's where a lot of drivers do prepare for Formula 4, really. It's that level of competitiveness that gets them ready for it. The close racing on track, the qualifying in FIA karting paddock is so close. I mean, they go out for two laps and that's all they do.
Wow.
You don't, because I've commentated on sessions which are 10 minutes, and for 8 minutes, nothing happens. So it's that bad that I think they even shorten the sessions down to 5 minutes, because it's like, we know what's going to happen. No one's going to do anything with 2 minutes to go. You go out and you get literally two laps because how soft the tires are. So, and it's, you know, tire management comes into play during races. It's strategy, the carts haven't got. I don't think he raced KZ, which are the geared cars, but physically they're very demanding cars to drive as well. That's why you'll see people like Lando Norris, Charles Leclerc in the winter, they go out and drive their own carts around these circuits because it puts a real strain through your body. And that's, I guess, what helps you get ready to make the jump up, even though that's a completely different physical exercise.
And in your experience, is there anyone who's made that jump from karting to single-seater any better than Kimi has?
No. No, I don't think I've ever seen anyone make the jump up as good as he has. People have done very well, like Ollie Bearman did really well. He's one of the only drivers, I think, that didn't go through. He didn't come through the FIA karting paddock, which makes this season very exciting because him and Kimi have never raced each other before properly. And so that's going to make this season very exciting. I mean, that's a different conversation, of course. But no, I don't think I've ever seen anyone come out of karting and win two championships. Maybe Ollie Bearman, he did the same. Ollie Bearman was the first driver to win two F4 championships. He won the Italian and German F4 championships. And then Andrea Kimi Antonelli went and did the same thing. But he's kind of continued that unbeaten form since and remains an unbeaten driver. So, yeah, I guess I could say Ollie Bearman, I could say he did a similar jump, but Kimi's kind of carried that momentum forward at just a tiny bit better if we were really putting them head to head. But I guess this year, we finally put them properly together as a head to head as teammates.
Yeah, and that's going to be really interesting, and obviously we'll touch on that shortly. So let's just go back to when Mercedes decided to kind of take him on. What do you think they were thinking then? Do you think back then they even knew this guy's got real potential? Just remind me, when was it again that they sort of signed him?
I heard it was 2017, but it might have been slightly later.
So what was that between in terms of where was he competing at that point?
He would have been racing. Well, that was when he was racing in WSK. He was racing as a mini driver.
Wow.
So I don't know. It might have been slightly later than that. Yeah.
That's okay. We can edit bits out if there's anything.
Yeah. He might have been slightly later than that. It was 2019, actually. He was announced as part of the team. So by then, he was racing is when he joined the Rosberg Racing Academy, the Rosberg Karting Academy. So that was basically it was him joining Nico's team. And that was when he joined Mercedes, which was a nice, I guess, but for Nico, quite a nice story, really, because Nico once had the backing of Mercedes as a young karting driver himself. And now he was giving Mercedes the next young talent himself. So it was quite a nice story, really, how that panned out, especially how successful he's gone on to been, how he's gone on to do in the feeder series since then. So, yeah, it wouldn't be long after that. He only did two or three seasons, and then he was off on his way.
And is F4 the first thing of single seater?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah. So that, you jump in
off the record sort of thing. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't know that. Okay. So he basically, Kimi came in. He did a really good job in F4, and then last year, I believe, he sort of got involved in a bit of F3, which is like kind of Formula Regional. Is that right?
Yeah. So he did. He won the Italian and ADAC F4 championships. Sadly, ADAC F4, German F4 doesn't exist anymore. And he also won the FIA Motorsport Games as well, which they did like an F4 Cup. And he won that by, I think, about 30 seconds. And he was injured as well that weekend. But he absolutely blitzed it despite carrying this injury he had, which was astounding, really. Then he moved into the Formula Regional classes. Now, that a lot of people would, I guess, know that as Formula Renault.
Yeah.
If you remember Formula Renault, it's basically a more modern version of Formula Renault. The cars are fairly similar to what they used to be then. It runs under a different name now called Formula Regional European Championship by Alpine. It's the European version, but it runs all around the world. So he started by doing the Middle East Championship and he won that. And then he came over and did the European Championship of it and he won that as well. So that makes him five championships in a row. That's the only five single-seater championships he's competed in so far.
That's insane. I mean, you talk about him being around in 2015 and you think, oh, that wasn't really that long ago. But obviously that was sort of 9 years ago. You forget that he's not even 18. This guy's not even 18 till August. So it is it is mad. Obviously, you commentated on him quite a lot last year. And what were the sort of standout things for you in terms of his driving style and how he portrays himself on track?
First of all, qualifying. We have 20 qualifying sessions throughout the season. One of those he couldn't take part in, but he qualified in the top 10 in the 19 others. And we had 36 drivers in the championship. So for him to be in the top 10 in every single session, shows why he was a champion, I think. He got huge amounts of wins and podiums. There was two moments that stood out for me, really. One was his championship winning drive, which he picked up a round before the season. He wrapped it up in Zandvoort in fairly tricky conditions. He won by 12 and a half seconds despite a safety car. He drove off by about 10 seconds. Safety car came out and then he drove off by 12 and a half seconds. And I spoke to him after the race and he said, I just wanted to win the championship. I think he had to win the race to win the championship. And yeah, he there was nothing, even though he was way ahead, he was still setting fastest laps at the end of the race. And then the final race of the season, he was sitting in seventh place going on to the last lap. And his team, Prema Racing, were in a head-to-head battle for the team's championship with another team. And they were tied on points. And they came over the radio to Kimi and said, you know, if you get P6, we win the championship. And we were at Hockenheim, if you remember Hockenheim. But coming around that big curve towards the hairpin, he just made this big lunge on the kid in sixth place and got the place. And that won them the team's championship. Like he literally sold him the dummy, like moves to the outside and then dives to the inside. And he said they came over the radio to him and just said, we need you to get P6, Kimmy. And he was like, sweet, okay. And just went and did it. So
that's so cool.
Yeah. So yeah, that was probably the two standout moments.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So would you say he's quite an aggressive driver? Like what sets him apart from people? Is it like is he a tire whisperer, or is he just one of these like kind of Max Verstappen types that he's just more aggressive than other people? Max is, but you know what I mean?
I think that was a perfect example he had no fear in that moment, and that was there was a championship on the line, and rather than just kind of sitting there, he just took a risk and the risk paid off. But it was a very calculated move at the same time.
Sure.
And also when there was a championship on the line, the round before he won by 12 and a half seconds, which he'd never really done before. So. The rest of the season he had taken wins, but that never quite by that manner. So I guess it kind of shows that when he's required to really go and fight for something, he's able to step it up at an extra level
that
no one was able to quite match. So for me that was two things, and also just the level of consistency. He was always there, always in the top 10 in qualifying, which is a big part of Formula Regional, and it's going to be a big part of F2 as well. You have to be always in that top 10 for the reverse grids, because you only get one qualifying at each weekend. So, yeah, for me, it's that consistency that really sets him apart. And I just think under pressure, he's very, very good. When you speak to him out the car, you'd never know that he's got all this going on of him being talked about, about F1.
That was going to be my next question, actually. So on the track, he's consistent and he's aggressive. Off the track, what's he like? And like, how do you deal with something like this when you're not even 18, when you've got probably people who are much older with much more money than you coming and telling you how good you are? How do you deal with that? And what's he like in the paddock and actually as a person?
He's a lovely kid. He's still the kid that, you know, I remember seeing in the paddock when he was a karting driver. Still the same kid. He hasn't changed at all, which is lovely, to be honest, because he could have easily changed a lot.
Do you get some that do? Some that really change?
It's hard to say because I only really commentate on them at this level. I've not really been in an F1 paddock before. So it's a hard question to answer. But I'd imagine so. Yeah. I don't mind. Naturally, I think drivers probably would.
That's okay. We can just talk about Kimi. So he's the same. He stayed
the same. Yeah. You know, I remember one thing I would say about him is when you speak to him, you feel like you're speaking to an F1 driver already.
Wow.
He's very, very mature for his age. You feel like you're speaking to someone probably in their early to mid 20s, can put a bad result behind him very quickly. I remember his home race is Imola and his car broke down on him from memory. He had all his family and friends there, and I came past him whilst he was with all his family and friends, and he still had a smile on his face and just put it past him. The next day he got a pole, you know, and got a podium. So, yeah, and won the race, actually. So, you know, so he was able to just put it past him straight away. So, yeah, he can get over bad results really quickly. But he doesn't forget about his fans either. He had a lot of fans in the paddock. I'd never seen so many fans for a driver at that level before. And as the season went on, that just expanded. I mean, when he won the title at Zandvoort, the Prema awning was full of people outside, he stopped to speak to me on his way down with his, you know, his championship trophy and everything, and he came out and, you know, signed all the autographs he could and took all the pictures he could. He took all the time to do all those things and always does. So he's a very nice character in that sense.
And when it was announced earlier this year, or when it was announced. When was it announced, sorry? That he was going to be in F2?
It was just after... He was announced in F2 literally the day after the season finished.
Okay. So that was last year, was it? Okay. I'll just pick up on that question. So when it was announced that he was going into F2 this year, was that quite a shock?
I think a lot of people saw it coming, in a way. There'd been rumours that it might be happening. Those rumours came up a little bit late in the day, i.e. the weekend of. But I don't know. I think, in a way, given how successful he's been, some people were quite excited about it rather than shocked by it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I personally, I was very excited to see it, and I wasn't surprised by it either, because F2, I don't know if you know, you probably have seen, released a brand new car this year. So everyone, all the teams have to learn that car, all the drivers have to learn that car, including the ones that have been racing in F2 for 3 or 4 seasons. His teammate Ollie Bearman, who has done a year in F2, now has to essentially reset everything he once learned about F2 and start again. So for Kimi Antonelli, he can step in and be on a level playing field with everyone straight away. So I think Mercedes, who possibly had some influence on that decision, given he's in their junior team, saw an opportunity to say, you know, let's just accelerate this a little bit, get him in, because we're going to be on a level playing field. So what are we waiting for?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And also, who knows? You know, with Lewis on his way out, that might have inspired things a little bit as well.
Sure. And we'll get onto that again as well later, I think. How big is the jump that he's got to do this year?
Massive. A Formula Regional car is a very heavy car. It's still a quick car, but it's quite a heavy car to drive. That's what a lot of the guys say about it, which means you're not pulling the speed through the corners nowhere near what you're going to be doing in, a Formula 3 car, but particularly not a Formula 2 car. So he's got to learn all of that stuff. He's got to learn pit stops, for example. That's one thing that all the F2 drivers have to learn in. The sheer power of the car. He's got to learn with driving on 2 compounds of tyres during a race as well, which is something that he would have never done before. He might have some experience because he has done some GT racing. His dad has his own sports car team, and he has raced for his father in GTs and won that race as well, funnily enough, I think, last year. So he might have had experience on that, doing 2 compounds. But there's a lot to learn. And the car is going to be a lot quicker than a Freca car, but he would have been doing preparation in the sim and as much as he can elsewhere to be ready for this.
And are there any early signs of how he might get on? I think there's been a bit of testing, hasn't there? F2 testing.
There has been. Prema never show their hand early
and
on.
And Prema are the team that he's driving for, right?
So he's racing for Prema, and he's going to be alongside Ollie Bearman, which are the two drivers linked the most highly to a seat in F1 next year. Ollie tipped to go to Haas, as they have that link to Ferrari. And he's got 6 sessions with them. Kimi linked to either Williams or Mercedes. That's sort of, I say link, that's where people are, the rumours are. Mm. But Kimi was 7th overall at Abu Dhabi and then 20th at Bahrain. I wouldn't read too much into the Bahrain result because every year Prema go there and they'll have... they had 5 sessions overall in 3 days. The first one, it just bucketed it down. So that was just a null session. So
wasn't that, I think I saw some things on Twitter about like how he was like seconds faster than other people, even in the rain or something.
That was a separate test that they were referring to. That's like a private test where they were not in F2 or F3 car. They would have been in. Yeah, I don't know too much about that story. I did see that story, but...
I thought it might be sort of Twitter rumour, to be honest.
That story I did see go out, but I think they would have been referring to something completely separate, basically, there.
Okay.
But this one, it basically chucked it down with rain on the first day, and I don't think it ever really has rained in Bahrain before, so that was a very strange one. But then they had 2 more days of testing after that, and Prema tend to go quick in the slower sessions and let everyone else go quick in the fast sessions, so if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So whilst everyone's doing their quick runs, they'll do their race runs, and then when everyone else is doing their race runs, they'll do their quick runs. So just as a sense to hold their cards close to their chest, and it's something we've become used to seeing in recent years, so we never really know what they're doing, similar to how I guess Mercedes used to do in recent years when they just used to wait until the last lap and then
nail it
1 second quicker than everyone.
And everyone would go, not again.
I don't think we quite know how quick Prema are just yet.
Okay, so the first race is obviously in Saudi in a couple of weeks' time.
It's in Bahrain next week.
The first race is in Bahrain next week. What should people be looking out for?
I think just tune in, because what I would say, for the first time since the championship started, really, a good few years, well, since, what was that, 2018, 2017. You know, we have a brand new car, which has been a few years since we've added new car. This process has been slightly delayed because of COVID. Same with F3 as well. So yeah, we have a brand new car to look out for. No one knows really who's going to be fast. You know, the drivers have to learn it. The teams have to learn it. They've only had one shakedown test in Spain. I think it was at Barcelona, which was, I think, only 2 days. And then they've had this Bahrain test where it rained on the first day. So they've had 2 days. They've had probably 4 days to learn this car. Wow. That's not a lot of time.
Sounds like carnage, if I'm honest.
So yeah, so really it's going to be, okay, no one's really going to know who's going to be fast. You know, Kimi's included in that. We don't know where he's going to fall into. But it also, flip reverse of that, Mercedes fans of junior drivers as well, gives him a great chance to go out there and fight for a good result straight away. So tune into it, because it's being tipped as the best F2 grid ever since the championship started, similar to when George Russell and Lando Norris were in this championship a few years back. It's being tipped similar to that, if not better than that, yeah, just because of the sheer amount of talent. I think there's 13 or 14 F1 junior drivers in there.
Wow.
So you're going to see a lot of Red Bull cars, a lot of Ferrari suits, Alpine suits, Mercedes suits. Yeah, he's got a really nice Mercedes suit as well, Kimi. It looks really nice. So yeah,
that's good.
You'll enjoy the onboard.
That's good. I think that excitement's definitely penetrating the kind of wider F1 universe, as it were, because I've never really watched F2, but this year I'm definitely clocking it as something that I want to watch and get into.
Yeah.
What do you think? Let's take the championship as a whole. What do you think is a good result for Kimi this year? Maybe, obviously, there's talk of him coming out up to F1 next year, but just being conservative, what's a good result? And then what would be something that's like mind-blowing? He's got to go to Williams, or that's so insane, get him into Mercedes for 25.
I think he'll be aiming for a top five.
Yeah.
Being realistic, Victor Martins, who was the F3 champion last year, finished fifth in Formula 2 last year. And he won the Antoine Hubert Award with that, as means he's top rookie. And he's now back again this year. And I think that's what he'll be aiming for, to be top rookie, top five. If he gets that, he'll be happy, and we'll probably, you know, then it becomes a case, do we see him jump up or back for another year to go for the title? That's down to the guys at Mercedes and whoever else, I guess. But I think that's what we'll be aiming for. To answer your second question, given the form he's shown, I just put it out there, he's unbeaten in single-seater racing so far. Unbeaten. Every championship he's ever done, he's won.
Okay, so top five finish would be strong, you think? I think there's a lot of expectation and a lot of hype that people might think that he's just going to come in, rock up, finish first in the championship. But that can't be realistic, can it?
No, I think a top five finish would be realistic target. He's got a lot to learn in the car. You know, it's going to be a lot of hype around him. And I think he'll just want to, you know, get his feet under the table, get some good results in. And yeah, he's, you know, he's carrying the weight of a lot of expectation, and I hope that doesn't catch up with him. But I think top five result would be a hell of an achievement to given he didn't do F3. If he can go from Formula Regional straight into F2, top five, one of the top rookies, if not top rookie, win the Antoine Hubert Award with that. I mean, that would be a superb achievement for me, and would give him a chance at, who knows, a look in for somewhere in 2025 on the grid. If not, he'd be back in 2025 in F2 for a title challenge, and a very strong one. But yeah, if he was to do any better than that, then I think we'd be looking at a really fantastic achievement, particularly if he was to get in the top three, as Will Buxton has been saying in his commentary in the testing stuff. Then I think he'd be giving Mercedes a very hard choice to make, because if he was to go and get top three, that would be quite astounding, to be honest. And I think that would be a really hard decision to make for Mercedes if he was to do that.
Yeah, obviously Toto's spoken about maybe this is our chance to do something bold. And I imagine that is sort of flirting with the idea of putting Antonelli in. But then he's also poured a bit of cold water on that since. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, I think.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's one of those. I think if he jumps in now and he starts putting in results that people didn't expect, then what are you waiting for, right? That's how I see it. I think throw him in. You know, especially if he goes and challenges for the title in Formula 2, I think Mercedes have no choice but to just put him in there, because otherwise, you know, it's going to just turn into a bidding war. Yes, you can put him at Williams for a season, but who's going to fill the seat at Mercedes for a year? It's when you've got a talent that's this good, look what Max Verstappen's done since, you know.
Exactly.
So, I mean, obviously people would think I'm getting ahead of myself there, but let's see what he does first. He's done exceptionally well in the lower feeder series. Formula 2 is, of course, a different beast, so we'll see how he settles in. But I've got a lot of, from what I've seen of him in the junior stuff, I think he's going to settle down very, very quickly. So, keep your eyes on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And I think the other thing to mention here is obviously Toto has spoken about missing out on Max. And I think that is very much playing on Mercedes's mind right now.
Yeah.
As they're looking at Kimi, they don't want to lose out on him again. They won't, because they've got the opportunity. They've got the first option, but it very much feels like it's a kind of when, not an if he's going to make it to F1.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so as well. I think he's already made it in a way with some of the stuff he's putting in. And now it's just a case of, you know, when does he make that jump up to Mercedes? Because the audition process is almost done now, isn't it? And the seats are starting to open up. So if he weren't to make it in 2025, it would just be a seat somewhere else for a year to get himself ready for it. But we've got a really special talent here, and I think it's going to bring success to the team, because I think we've got a future world champion in Andrea Kimi Antonelli. I really do believe that. And he's got the talent, the raw talent, to be a multiple world champion. And, you know, it's something I'm definitely comfortable saying with what I've seen of him. He's just the skills, the raw skills he has, and to win 5 championships in 2 years, in your first 2 years as a single seater driver, it's something I don't think that's ever been done before. So, he's going to go on and do some big, big things.
Chris, that's fantastic. And thank you so much for your time. Just quickly,
you're
before
welcome.
We let you go, are there any other Mercedes drivers in the ranks at various stages that you think we should keep an early eye on?
Yes. So they are bringing stuff. They are bringing drivers through at the moment. One of them being Alex Powell, who has... who's coming through the ranks now. He's just jumped up into F4. He did used to run under a Jamaican race license, but I think he's just changed that now. He was racing for the Prema karting team in the FIA karting European Championships and the World Championships. He's just made the jump up to F4. I know he was racing out in the United Arab Emirates. I think he did pretty well out there. It's looked like he was fighting for the top 10 this year. For the first time, he's going to be going on a full season racing in Italian F4, which is, you know, your headline F4 championship internationally. And he's going to be doing Euro 4 as well, which is a bit of a new championship, just a kind of a 3-round championship. So, he's the next one in the books, I'd say. Alex Powell the one to watch. I think he runs under an American license now, but yeah, he's kind of the next kid in the ranks.
I'm thinking about the marketing opportunities already there.
yeah, but he was always known. He was kind of the young kid from Jamaica. He's a very special talent. I know the guys at Mercedes are very excited by what they see. I'm very excited by what I see by him as well. I think we're going to see him coming through into Formula 3, FIA Formula 3 in the next 2 or 3 years. He's got some real talent.
And talking of Formula 3, that's going to be keeping you busy this year, isn't that right? Where else can people be listening to you if they've enjoyed this chat?
Formula 3, I'll be doing Porsche Super Cup as well. If you're a sports car fan, I'll also be doing some other stuff with F1 as well. I'm going to be doing some of the main sort of races as well on some of the alternative broadcasts. So that's going to be really good fun as well to be back doing that, doing the F1 Kids stuff, which has been really good fun last year. We're going to be back doing that this year. Formula Regional European Championship by Alpine, Freca as we call it. I'll be back doing that again. If you're at the 24-hour Le Mans this year, you'll hear me around the circuit as well. I'm going to be back doing that as well. So, if you're there, I'll see you there.
Perfect, Chris. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for this week. I hope you found that interview as interesting as we found recording it. Kimi makes his F2 debut this weekend before the feature race, and I certainly know I'll be tuning in to see how he gets on. You can find all the session times and details online by just Google searching. A reminder, please, to subscribe and rate this episode if you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week to debrief the 2024 Bahrain GP.